Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, talk about cause and effect is one of the weirdest things that I haven't been able to post on Facebook any of my shows, and our listenership's going up. I don't think those are, at least I hope they're not, hope those things aren't necessarily related, but it just seems, pretty incredible. I'm looking at this going, wow, we got those new listeners. This is great. So thank you for sharing. If you're not sharing, please do so, and then thank you for sharing. It's been, we started off with, I think, the week with one of the most incredible shows we've ever done. And that was with four amazing women, victims of breast implant technology that suffered illnesses, that suffered diseases, that suffered crippling injuries, and are now fighting back. And they're very courageous, and they're wonderful people, and they're all friends of mine now on Facebook. And Zegan Horn, the original person who got me in touch with these folks, and herself is a crusader in this, and it's just amazing to see what's going on. Yesterday, we had the Convention of States. And it was very interesting to hear. Actually, I was kind of surprised. I really thought they were going to have more details of proposals, but it seems like they really want to work stuff out at the convention, which to me immediately, sends up red flags thinking, no, I don't think so. Because the minute you open up a convention without defined arguments and amendments going in, and you say, well, let's write them during the convention, that's when they say, well, while we're at it, why don't we just take out the Second Amendment and the First Amendment? Let's rewrite those. Let's say, you have the right to free speech as long as you don't offend anyone. Or, like some constitutions in some of the states, they'll say, like in Florida, it says you have the right to keep and bear arms, but and it says, but... this is where you've lost it, right? When the minute says, but this is where it goes from a right to a privilege. The state has the right to tell you, or prescribe the manner at which, your arms may be carried, which of course is nonsense. If the state can tell you how to carry your firearm, then you don't have a right to carry your firearm because they do. They have the right because they're telling you how to do it. All right. So all this stuff's going on in my head. And I'm thinking of what to do in the show this morning. And, of course, there's always the Johnson & Johnson, the vaccine that the messenger RNA genetic modification technology that all of a sudden, gee, surprise, surprise, people are dying. We told you. We told you this was experimental stuff. We told you it wasn't FDA approved. We told you that why would you vaccinate people, who are 99% immune already? That makes no sense. The test of whether a vaccine is necessary is A, whether people, of the age group or demographic that you're vaccinating actually need it and are immune already. Okay. So the question is, who are the people that need a vaccine? Well, those over 80 generally, that's not the right question. Who is the most vulnerable to COVID-19? That'd be the oldest folks, generally over 80, and those that have what they call comorbidities. In other words, something that's going to kill you anyway. Obesity, diabetes, cancer, heart problems. And the thing is, as most of us get older, most of us experience all those things. I've already had, cancer and heart, surgery. So, all right, I've already been through the big two. The cancer was really easy, actually. It was skin cancer, it was removed. But there's a pretty sizable chunk of my leg that went with it. And so that's okay. I'd rather be alive. Thank you. I can, the skin will grow back. It's okay. It wasn't deep enough to have done anything serious, but that was on its way. So these are the things that everybody gets sick from something and everybody, has these diseases. Of course, the older you get, the worse it gets until the point where you're done. But the thing is, for the rest of you young, healthy people, why are 21-year-olds getting vaccinated? Why are kids getting vaccinated? That's stupid. So me personally, I would have required that anybody, before they get a vaccine, be tested for immunity. Because why do you need a vaccine if you're immune? That makes no sense at all, all right? So all these things I'm thinking about, right? And so I've got a ton of things to do where we're really going to go with a show. We're going to start with Chief Dan Skyhorse and the Creek Tribe Report. And that's going to be today's topic, black is a color, not a race weapon, okay? And yet that's exactly what it's become. The color black has now become the weapon black. All right. And so we're living in a Marxist society where where they've replaced the class war with a race war. And so the whole point of the Democrats and the leftists is to, reinstitute segregation, except they're doing it. They're kind of reversing it. In other words, Southern white Democrats you know, who were predominantly the segregationists, are sort of reversing now, and they're now turning it around and making, you know, black supremacists and white victims, you know, because of even the wall calling, you know, blacks victims and whites oppressors. It's a fascinating thing, but dividing people up into black and white. And I never think of myself as white. I don't, unless somebody calls me a racist or an oppressor or a white or has white privilege or white nationalism or, you know, any of those things, right? That's it. The other thing, I just think of myself as Greg. I'm an individual. I think of everybody else as individuals. Do I see skin colors? Of course, I'm not blind. But does it mean anything? No, doesn't mean a damn thing. Okay, but this is what we have now. So you have to understand that systemic racism and cultural Marxism and diversity and you know, all the stuff that's going on is all part of the destruction of America and the separation of us. If we can be separated into skin colors, then we can fight each other. Oh boy, because now you feel this sort of, you know, you feel this guilt if you don't represent your skin color properly. Well, I don't have to represent my skin color because I don't give a damn. That's not a concept that registers with me, all right? So skin color, once you realize that skin color means nothing, you know, and this whole Obama idea that, you know, you hate people that don't look like you, nobody looks like me, you know? I mean, how many people are 6'1", you know, way too much hair for my age, big mustache, you know, I look like Colonel Sanders, you know, got a little chin beard, okay? Big glasses, big nose. You know, and sound, nobody who looks or sounds like me except me. So I don't compare myself to anybody else. I don't compare myself to other white people. That's stupid. That's ridiculous. You know, there are Croatian white people. Do they have anything in common with me? No. How about Ukrainian white people? Do they have anything in common with me? Probably not. You know, how about New Zealand? Well, a little closer, at least for British Commonwealth, you know, because I'm Canadian originally. But none of these things make any sense. Anyway, we'll get onto that later. I want to get onto the election correction report. I'm not sure exactly how much time we'll get to it, but the articles, I post them. Everything is on Parler now, at Greg Penglis, and that's where you really want to go. So let's start with the big one initially. And this is what happened when President Trump, and I call him President Trump. You notice you never hear me say President Biden, because he's not. He's Thief in Chief Biden. He's the person currently occupying the White House. He has no business being there, and the sooner we get him out, the better. My question is, and this is one of the reasons I want to get Matt Gaetz, Congressman Gaetz, back on the show, is not to ask him about a scandal, because I don't give a damn. I really don't, all right? I mean, that's going to be investigated, and we'll see what happens. I think it's a political witch hunt myself. But what I want to know is I want to find out if President Trump, the lawful president of this term, actually wants it. In other words, if we go through all the election correction, you know, is he going to run back to the office and go, thank you, it's about time? Or is he thinking, well, I'm kind of happy being outside? So I don't know. That's something I want to ask Gaetz about on the record, because pretty much everything I do here is. All right, so the election correction report. Let's get started. Gateway Pundit. Our politically correct Supreme Court will get what they deserve. Trump slams timid SCOTUS and helpless Mitch McConnell in explosive new statement. Now, that's what I call a headline, right? And this is Jim Hoft, published April 13th at 11:45 a.m. In Gateway Pundit. He says, last Friday, Joe Biden announced an executive order to look into packing the U.S. Supreme Court. On Monday, President Trump released a statement and unloaded on the, quote, politically correct Supreme Court and how, quote, ironic it would be if Joe Biden packed the court with new far-left justices. President Trump added, quote, our politically correct Supreme Court will get what they deserve, an unconstitutionally elected group of radical left Democrats who are destroying our country. If and when this happens, I hope the justices remember the day they didn't have the courage to do what they should have done for America. Let me translate that. The Supreme Court is acting illegally. They abdicated their duty. They should have. Actually, they were mandated to take the Texas case. And the Texas case was the one that challenged the other states, saying, look, our vote's being diluted because of all the fraud in these other states. Our citizens' votes don't count every time there's a fraudulent ballot counted, you know, as a vote in all these other states. Okay. And that's absolutely a valid case. Okay. The Constitution demands that the Supreme Court take that case. The fact that they didn't means the court is outside the Constitution. They have violated the Constitution. They need to be basically removed. You know, those justices who did not vote to take the Texas case, which they were constitutionally mandated to do, have defied their job. They violated their oath. They have violated what they're supposed to do to be there, and so they should no longer be there. So the only justices that should remain on the court are Justice Alito and Justice Thomas. Everybody else needs to go, and different people appointed. The problem is, who's going to appoint them now? You can't have an insurrectionist appoint them. The insurrectionist Biden in the White House, because those are going to be fraudulent appointments. They're moot. So we're stuck with the group we have, even though we know they're violating the Constitution. All right. So we're hoping that the people who have already violated the Constitution are somehow going to do the right thing with the election correction, you know, given the fact that if they don't, they're going to look like, you know, poop, you know, the real word, right? You know, for not doing what they're supposed to. Okay. Let me continue. Trump then took a swipe at weakling Mitch McConnell, adding, quote, with leaders like Mitch McConnell, they are helpless to fight. He didn't fight for the presidency, and he won't fight for the court. If and when this happens, Biden packing the courts, I hope the justices remember the day they didn't have the courage to do what they should have done for America. Yeah, so that's, I guess that's, it's the same, he tends to repeat himself a lot, all right? So this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. This is fascinating. I've got the whole statement here, statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th president of the United States of America, and 46th, yeah, who should still be there. He says, wouldn't it be ironic if the Supreme Court of the United States, after showing they didn't have the courage to do what they should have done on the great presidential election fraud of 2020, was passed by the same people, the radical left Democrats, who they are so afraid of, that they so pathetically defended in not hearing the election fraud case. Now there is a very good chance they will be diluted and moved throughout the court system so that they can see how the lower courts work, with many new justices added to the court, far more than had been reported. There's also a good chance they will be term limited. We had 19 states go before the Supreme Court who were shockingly not allowed to be heard. Believe it or not, the President of the United States was not allowed to be heard based on no standing, not based on the facts. You know, he says the court wouldn't rule on the merits of the great election fraud, including the fact that local politicians and judges, not state legislatures, made major changes to the election, which is in total violation of the United States Constitution. Our politically correct Supreme Court will get what they deserve, an unconstitutionally elected group of radical left Democrats who are destroying the country. With leaders like Mitch McConnell, they are helpless to fight. He didn't fight for the presidency, and he won't fight in the court. If and when this happens, I hope the justices remember the day they didn't have the courage to do what they should have done for America. So that's the complete statement. I want to get you the highlights because that's how the article starts, and then go on into the actual statement. You know, it's worth keeping that actual statement because he's absolutely correct. Okay, the Supreme Court failed. Mitch McConnell failed. I mean, that really, just that statement by President Trump is, you know, is all I really need for the election correction report, because he sums it all up. Okay. So everybody failed. You know, it's not that the courts, you know, turned down or dismissed or got rid of, you know, the charges before them and you know, found in favor of the Democrat fraudsters. They didn't. They refused to hear the evidence. The Supreme Court refused to hear the case. They refused to hear a case constitutionally they can't refuse. Okay, this is why it's so ironic. Now, the remedy for that, of course, is the Congress to remove them for bad behavior. That's in the Constitution. They're not there for life terms. They're only there for terms of good behavior. And their behavior is so atrocious, they have no reason to still be there, except for Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito. you know, the rest of them start over because you need to get rid of the liberals and the so-called, you know, and the liberals and the rhinos need to go. Because they obviously can't live up to their oath of office, so they can't be there. Right? That's pretty simple. Well, liberals can't be on the court anyway because they can't live up to the oath of office, which is to actually, you know, support and defend the Constitution as written, because they don't believe in the Constitution as written, and that's a whole other story. Anyway, so this is where we stand, and you know, and you might think, well, what can Mitch McConnell do? Well, Mitch McConnell can do a whole bunch of things. You know, for one thing, he should have closed down Congress by having all the Republicans leave. You know, on January 21st, and say, what? We're not going away. You've inaugurated the wrong person. You know, you should have inaugurated Donald Trump. We're not going to be here until this is corrected. There's an ongoing investigation. You know, whatever happened to the term ongoing investigation? Remember that? All right. So an ongoing investigation is when they can't do anything, say anything, change anything. Nothing happens because it's an ongoing investigation. Well, we have an ongoing investigation. It's called the election correction. It's going on all the time. So why is Congress doing business with a fraudulent president? You know, and having executive orders being whipped out like, you know, like orders in a, you know, in a fast food restaurant. It's pretty much how they go, right? I just thought of that. I kind of like that analogy. Anyway, so Biden's, you know, say it again. Biden's dashing out orders like, you know, food at a fast food restaurant. And he has no idea what he's doing. It's the formula. It's the Democrats' plan. You know, it's the infrastructure bill is, you know, it's basically the Green New Deal. All right. Don't hide it. That's what it is. All right. So So all these things are happening, and it's quite fascinating. In fact, so what can McConnell do? All right, so let's get back to that. I'm digressing. I'm sort of looking at my article going, yeah, I think I better talk about that. So he could close on the Congress. He could have declared, in fact, any senator or any House member could also have declared that the budget, the stimulus package and this upcoming infrastructure bill are not reconciliation bills. Okay, just because Chuck Schumer calls it a reconciliation bill doesn't mean it's a reconciliation bill. It's not. It has, you know, a reconciliation bill has to be reconciled with something. You know, it has to be reconciled with the Budget Act. In other words, it's an act that is integral to the budget, that is part of the budget, that is somehow in disagreement with the budget or out of the budget, but it spends a whole bunch of money, and therefore they have to reconcile. They have to correct it to make it fit within the Budget Act. That can be done with a simple majority. It's a procedural vote. Okay. Whereas a standalone bill like the stimulus and a standalone bill like the Green New Deal, aka the infrastructure bill, are absolutely subject to a filibuster. Okay. They're not reconciliation bills. So the fact that no senator has stood up to say this means that they're abdicating their duty too, and they should go. All right. So if we get rid of all the people who are abdicating their duty, we'd have a new Supreme Court, except for two members. We'd have a new Congress, except for maybe, you know, a few people in the Senate. But even then, every senator could have objected to what happened after January 6th to maintain the correction, the election correction, and none of them did. You know, even my favorites like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul didn't stand up the next day and say, wait a minute, we can't do any Senate business until we continue this election challenge. They didn't do that. They could have. Okay, so all these failings, the failings are legendary. So you put it all together, and it really makes for a fascinating pastiche, if you will, of everything that's going on. So now let's turn to one of my favorite sources, which is Uncover DC. There we go. Uncover DC, which has a headline here, DiPerno continues pursuit of the truth in Antrim County election. Of course, Antrim is in Michigan. This is one of my favorite places to watch, right? This is the date of this is Wendy Mahoney. Wendy Strauch Mahoney, April 13th, 2021, all right? So recent stuff. It says months, this is yesterday. The article says months later, Antrim County is still in the spotlight regarding the alleged fraud in the 2020 election. Well, I don't think there's anything alleged about it, but that's just me. Article says on Friday, April 9th, attorney Matt DiPerno filed a response to his case in Antrim County because state officials and several counties have sought to, quote, obfuscate and, quote, run the clock out on discovery in the ongoing lawsuit. See, you folks are behaving so guilty. Obviously, we know you're guilty because innocent people don't run the clock out or obfuscate. Innocent people get the evidence out as quickly as possible and say, here, take a look. I got nothing to hide. Look, go ahead. See, you want to see it? These ballots are perfectly honorable, honest. We can trace them. We've got, we've got the chain of custody. You know, we know who did what. We know who voted. And we have the correct amount of voter envelopes, you know, for the mail-ins, and the signatures match, and everything's fine. Okay? They're not saying that. They're saying just the opposite. They're saying, no, you can't take a look. No, we're trying to run the clock out. Well, they're not saying that, but that's what they're doing. Okay? So the behaving as guilty people would behave. All right? And so the legal maneuvering to me is clear evidence. You might as well just confess. Okay? If you're trying to hold up the investigation of the election because you know there's a bunch of stuff that makes you guilty as hell, you know, then you look, you know, to me, that's a confession. All right. Back to the article. Yesterday, the response went to Judge Eisenheimer in Michigan. It reminds me of Eisenhower, but anyway. Judge Eisenheimer in Michigan's 13th Circuit Court. I'm not making fun of Germans or Germany, okay? Stop that. It just so happens that Germany, you know, is like the second largest, you know, ethnic group of white people in the country. The England's the first, Germany's the second. And in fact, we're one vote away in Congress from speaking German. I just have fun with the German accent like I do with the Russian accent. But we don't have a Russian installed right now, so I can't do a Russian accent. But what do? I do. And am I making fun of Russians? No, making fun of accent. It's okay. Fine. All right. Judge Eisenheimer in Michigan's 13th Circuit Court, and he dismissed the subpoenas issued to eight counties to allow further discovery that would be used as a control group to confirm or deny assertions that the Antrim County election results were manipulated algorithmically. Telegrams at Michigan Conservatives channel, as reported by Patrick Byrne, I know that name, he's the guy from Overstock, announced the decision, and you can see it, they've got it. So the article's posted on my on my Parler account, at Greg Penglis. Judge Eisenhower stated, the court finds that the information that the plaintiff, Nestor Perno, seeks is not likely to lead to relevant information for the following reasons. So in other words, this is how they block the court cases from going forward. They say either it's not going to change the outcome of the election, which of course they don't know, and secondly, they say that there's nothing there anyway to find, which of course they do know, and they don't want you to find it. So let's be clear here. So Judge Eisenhower said, and we should also call him Judge Poindexter. Yeah. So Judge Poindexter stated, the plaintiff has not put forth admissible evidence to show that there would be even a possibility of such recovery. The, quote, experts that have been identified to support its contentions, and this is Frank Cyber Ninja and Penrose. I think Cyber Ninja, that's the same company that's doing the Arizona audit, okay? So they're already out for these people. I got to get them on the show. So anyway, so Frank Cyber Ninja and Penrose, while having interesting theories, speaking of theories, Judge, are not expert witnesses that have, as of yet, been named within this court's case management order and were produced in the waning hours after discovery had closed this case. So in other words, you're too late, okay? It doesn't matter if people are guilty as hell. I'm sorry, you're too late. I mean, we gave you a chance, and you didn't do it within the time. So chances are, if I know the way the judges work, the judge gave these folks so much stuff to do and so much information to prepare and so many things, that the judge requested, that they couldn't possibly have done it within the time available. And then the judge says, well, gee, time's run out. Sorry. Yeah. So that's how judges rig cases, right? So the remainder of the – slow down, Greg. The plaintiff – this is the remainder of the quote. The plaintiff has not deposed the witnesses who may indeed know about the deleted messages and put them under oath. Discovery is closed. Well, whoop-de-doo for you, you traitor. You miserable judge. Get him off the bench, too. Bad behavior. Anyway, so there's more to that article, but you can read that. So that's what's going on there, right? Now, what's interesting, the reason I do all these articles together is because if I do them individually, you go, oh, that's interesting. There's a vote fraud case, all right? But you put them all together, and you go, wow, there's a lot of vote fraud cases. That's why I do it in one report. So let's go to this would be ABC 13 Eyewitness News, Texas. And this is from April 11th. Voting reform bill passes through House committee outlawing unsolicited vote-by-mail applications. Okay, everybody hates the Texas law. It's voter suppression. They only want the honest people to vote. They only want the real people to vote. They only want the living, the people in their county, the people who are registered, the people who are citizens. Voter suppression. See, understand that that's what Democrats mean when they say voter suppression. They mean they're suppressing their ability to illegally get as many votes as they think they need to win an election. And that's what voter suppression is. Okay, so if you keep that definition in your mind, so any Democrat leftist, commie, pinko, whatever, comes up to you and says, "Wow, there's voter suppression," we have to get black people to vote. And first of all, you accuse them of racism. Say, are you the black people are too stupid, to be able to register to vote? Because that's what it sounds like to me. That sounds like racism, all right? Because I believe black people, of course, as all people, are perfectly capable of getting IDs. You can't function in this society without an ID. Okay, so that's a bogus argument. The real argument, behind the bogus argument, they want the ability to rig elections. That's what all this is all about. And so these election reform bills, although too late for 2020, they should be going about at that as well as reforming for next time. They need to fix the last election, okay? Because there won't be a next time if they don't fix the last election and put some people in jail, right? Because there's no consequence for voting. So they can have all the laws they want. And who's to say the Democrats aren't going to break, 2022's laws like they broke 2020's laws? Okay, prison, because it's no penalty. So you got to throw some folks in jail who committed crimes. Okay, that's just how it works. Back to the article. Austin, Texas, KTRK, a Texas House committee on Thursday, advanced an elections bill that would make it a state jail felony for local election officials to distribute an application to vote by mail to a voter who didn't request one. In other words, no ballot harvesting, right? You don't just send out ballots, you don't send them out like raffle tickets. You don't send them out like coupons, okay? It's not a coupon. It's not a raffle ticket. You don't just mail these things out, all right? And so it's a ballot, and there has to be a chain of custody. This sounds like a good bill. House Bill 6 is part of a broader Republican effort this year to enact wide-ranging changes to elections in Texas that would ratchet up the state's already restrictive election rules. Wait a minute. Already restrictive election rules? What, you mean they only want the honest people to vote? They only want the law-abiding American citizens, to vote at the polls where they can be verified? Is that what you mean, ABC Channel 13? I bet you it is. in the name of election integrity, despite little to no evidence of widespread fraud. Well, obviously, these folks don't know what they're talking about. Okay, so sometimes I do this. I'll put an article in that that blatantly contradicts, you know, the truth, simply to show you how blatant the contradictions really are. So, and this is the same old thing that the media says. Well, there's no vote fraud. So why are you doing this? Why are you passing these voter laws when there's no vote fraud? Well, of course, there is vote fraud. Right? That's part of the problem. So the legislation was approved by the House Elections Committee on a party line vote with only Republicans voting in favor of it. Let me slow down. Only Republicans voting in favor of it, which means, okay, that only Republicans favor honest elections. Why don't you say that? But they don't. Okay, so that's how that goes. All right. Play our Biden public service announcement, because I think it's about time for that. I should do this more often. And I made this before the election, just to let you know that everything I prophesized, unfortunately, is coming true.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Okay, I'm going to turn that down a little bit. I think that might have been a bit loud. I get to play with these things here, and never quite sure how the volume works. So it's a question of how loud I said it, how loud you hear it. And, you know, you can always tell me, hey, Greg, nice announcement, but a little bit too loud. Okay, that's okay. You can do that. All right. So back to running around here. Everybody wants to tell me stuff on Facebook. Okay, fine. Okay. All right. There we go. Chief Skyhorse is going to join us in just a little bit here, and we shall talk about more and more fun stuff about, well, actually, what I really want to get onto is the main topic here, and that is the idea of, you know, racism accusations at our local city council. So that's going to be a very interesting topic to play more with, because it's disgusting. And, you know, I'll let you know more. I'll treat it more seriously than I'm doing now. I'm kind of trying to do two things at once here. All right, so let's get to the next bit of our election report. This comes from Just the News, and this is from, let me see if I can get the where's the article author? Natalia Mittelstadt and John Solomon. So John Solomon is the boss there. And this is from April 13th. And again, Just the News. Zuckerberg Group gave Detroit $7.4 million to dramatically expand vote in key city and city key to Biden win. So expand vote in city key to Biden win. Okay, it's a little awkward headline, but you get the idea. So in other words, Zuckerberg, engaging in leftist politics, gave tons of money to make sure that the technology of fraud and everything else was there for Biden to, you know, get more I can't say votes, get more ballots, because they're not votes unless they're legal, right? But he certainly got more ballots, okay? And but enough of those weren't legal, but obviously we have a vote fraud. And why Detroit? Huh. I don't know, major Democrat city. There was an article I found not too long ago about how the fraud always happens in the cities because, you know, in a small town or a small county, everybody knows everybody, or at least enough people know enough people, and it's easy to track when something goes out of whack. So all of a sudden, if you have – this is why Antrim County, Michigan, near it's such a – well, I think – I don't know if it's near Detroit or not. Anyway, somewhere in Michigan. But it's so easy to track because it's a fairly conservative Republican voting county. It's not that big, and all of a sudden Biden wins, really, and more people – I think there's more – you know, votes, and there are registered people to vote, you know, so you cheat in a county like that, it shows up really fast. And so that's why they do big cities, because they figure they can, you know, mix it more in. And there's always been a certain level of election fraud, you know, but it didn't rise to the level of actually, you know, changing the outcomes. Well, starting with 1960, the Kennedy-Nixon election, we think it did, from what I've been reading. But I am absolutely convinced that 2018, that Congress, you know, was not a Democrat Congress in the House. I'm sure the GOP won. They just didn't change because they're a bunch of wimps. I could use another word than I have before, but they're a bunch of wimps. All right, so let me get to the article here. The Center for Tech and Civil Life, the CTCL, a voter advocacy group funded by Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, who looks like a Star Trek alien. The last part's mine. Okay, I'm sorry. Donated $7.4 million last year to Detroit to, among other things, dramatically expand strategic voter education and outreach in a blue city key to Joe Biden's 2020 election win, according to memos obtained by Just the News under open records request. Yeah, it's really nice. They're actually doing what they're supposed to do. They're giving you the information they're supposed to give you, which is kind of cool. Doesn't happen all the time, but it did here. Detroit received three grants in 2020 from CTCL for $200,000, $3,512,000, and $3,724,450, according to records released under Michigan's Freedom of Information Act. The amount augmented by more than half the city's $13 million election budget and dwarfed its $6.3 million in grants CTCL gave five Wisconsin cities, a series of donations that has generated accusations that private money was wrongly used to influence state and local election judges and administrators. You think? Of course it was. And by huge amounts. And so that's what's going on there. And this makes sense, too, because when you think about it, where are our biggest problems? You know, who's failing the most? Judges and administrators, okay? And the administrators would be the secretaries of state, the attorney generals, the governors, you know, the executive branch of the states, which is duty-bound to follow the state legislative laws regarding the elections. They didn't do that, okay? So this is where our greatest failings are. And the judges who refused to hear the case despite the mountains of evidence staring them right in the face, they're like, well, there's no evidence or it won't change the outcome of the election. Well, that doesn't matter. You know, there is evidence. I mean, you've got 50,000 affidavits out there, and there is, you know, and there's every reason to believe that it would change the outcome of the election, but because the margins that Biden, you know, allegedly got more votes than Trump are so slim as to be ludicrous, as to be ridiculous, as to be insane, and all of them came after the election stopped counting and after the machines got cracking and the algorithms got cooked in and everything else. Trump won the election in every place that they're challenging that Biden allegedly got more. It's really quite fascinating. Anyway, Chief Dan Skyhorse is on the line, so let me get to the Trevor Report, and I have a topic to present to him this time. So we're going to have a bit of challenging debate, and actually I'm really curious on Chief Dan's point on this, but in the meantime, let's get the Creek Tribe Report. Let's change our worlds here a little bit and come back with a whole new perspective. Hey, yo, hey!
The drum, heartbeat of the Creek people, like the first heartbeat you hear before you were born, like the heartbeat of the living spirit in all things. Join us each week at this time as we explore issues and topics important to the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe and American Indians across this great country. Join in as we enter the world of the Creek Tribe and see the world as they do through the eyes of Chief Dan Skyhorse, or in the Muscogee language, Chothloko Suta Miko. Chothloko Suta Miko, Hensei.
Hensei, Estongo, Estongo.
Of course. Oh. And how do you, what's that word again for things are great?
Heathly Mahi.
Heathly Mahi. Okay, I have to add that to my collection here, and I'll do my little spelling of it, so I'll know exactly how to pronounce it if I do. I've got a topic that I wrote you about last night, and I want to know if you want to leap right into that, or do you have other things that are on your mind first? Because
go ahead.
All right. I noticed this on Facebook last night, and so this is a very local issue, but I know this is happening nationwide, and it may be worldwide as far as I know. It depends on how far this cultural Marxist systemic racism diversity division is going. So let me just read my Facebook page. So here's what happened. We had a city council meeting last night in Milton, and there were two people were elected, and there were three folks that voted for who are white people, who voted for two other folks who are white people. And then a black person accused the white people of being racist for not voting for black people, saying that they were overqualified or at least qualified for the job. And this just threw me into a fury because I'm sick and tired of black being used as a weapon. Okay, black is a color, not a weapon, which is the title of the show today. All right. And the other thing that immediately leapt to mind was you, because I'm thinking to myself, these people are always screaming about you know, how black Americans are being affected and disenfranchised and voter suppressed and, you know, put down and need restitution and reparations and all this other stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. I happen to know a chief. where are the American Indians in this debate? And what is going on? And I'll read you in a little bit, but just it just seems to me what you've always said, and if nothing else, this would be worth having the report on, that, you know, it's like one minority is being used as the premier victim class, and other groups are not. And we have a perfectly viable Santa Rosa Creek tribe right here, and yet there's not a single mention of that in this entire post. I find that fascinating and disgusting at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Well, up and speaking of the Milton City Council, up until he passed away 4 years ago, the vice chief of our tribe was a sitting member of the Milton City Council for somewhere around 20 years.
Wow.
So we have been well represented. But our grounds is outside the Milton City limits.
Okay.
So we don't have any direct thing there. I live outside of the Milton City limits. So, you know, although I keep up with what's going on with the city council, we're not really directly in the middle of all that. And I will tell you that over until, I want to say probably about within the past 5 years, there was R.L. Lewis, who was a very prominent black man in the county and in the city of Milton, sat on the Milton City Council for a number of years. So if you look over the history, there has there's never been that kind of, well, we're excluding people because of their race or skin color or whatever. I've never seen that. I've never seen that to be the case, because there was representation from Native American and black folks, but there, and it's really not, you know, it's like, you know, some wise man once said, black is just a color. It's not a race. And so that's very true.
Who said
that's
that?
Why I don't know, some guy. And the, you know, that's why the Indians, the term chate or istichate or red man, a lot of people think that that term refers to Indians, just to Indians, but that's not true, because that refers to the inside, not the outside, because we're all the same color on the inside.
Okay.
And it's just a matter of melanin as to what your skin tone is, and but we're all, you know, we're all just alike on the inside.
Yeah, it's like the Hawaiian belief that, you know, our tour guide, when I took my daughter there, you know, everybody calls everybody cousin. And I asked him about that. I said, why do you do that? He says, well, we're all cousins. We all breathe the same air, you know, so we're all related. We don't care about what you look like or where you're from. We're all people. And so this is what I've always believed. In fact, this is why I'm so fascinated and disgusted at the same time with the way that the United States approaches race. Because it is, it's this constant division, and it all comes from the left. You know, without the left, we'd have such a peaceful life. We just go about normal things like being regular, you know, patriotic Americans. But the title of the show today, black is a color, not a race weapon. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get away from, I mean, there are black people. Okay, that's nice. There are white people. Fine. I don't think of myself as white. And I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, except in reference to somebody accusing me of being a white supremacist, white nationalist, you know, white or having all that white privilege. And the irony is, you know, coming here as an immigrant All right. I'm an off the boat immigrant, you know, in New York. You know, the ship sailed from Australia in New York Harbor. I crossed the whole Pacific Ocean, did the, you know, equator, you know, thing, the whole bit. I was a kid. And what was fascinating was, you know, this alleged white privilege. So I'm judged as a white person, even though I had an Australian accent. But once that wore off, you know, and I sound like everybody else, you know, people look at me and listen to me and they go, well, you know, obviously you've got that white privilege. And this is, you know, because, you know, you've your family connections and all this. Said, what family connections? My parents were divorced. I'm here on my own. You know, everything I've got on my own, you know, and you look at any immigrant group of a person of, quote, color. Okay, so immigrant groups of color have, you know, the Honduran American Society or Cuban American groups or things like that. There is no Canadian, Australian, white person off the boat, you know, group for me. All right, so I get the disadvantage of not having the extended family and all the alleged white privilege and the connections all through life, and I get the disadvantage of not having you know, ability to join an immigrant group because I don't look like an immigrant or sound like one, whatever people imagine the immigrant to be. So I'm right in the middle of all this. So this is why I think this is a bunch of nonsense. Okay, and I'm looking at all this crap because I don't have a group. And at this point, well, except you guys now, which is interesting. But quite honestly, the Cree tribe is my first real group, other than my nationality being born Canadian and having heritage in Australia and Canada, and that is a group. But it's a weird thing how the identity works, because of the disconnections I've had, you know, in my own life. But I look at this now, and I look at this country, you know, and if all you see is white people and black people. And, you know, the resegregation of this country that's going on from the left, you know, trying to start a new race war because they're all a bunch of cultural Marxists, you know, trying to use, you know, people's, you know, generate enough emotional feelings so that people will be against each other. And they're missing the big picture that the country's being destroyed and being taken over by this while we're still worrying about who's black and who's white and whether there's privilege or not, or who's getting, you know, where they're supposed to be or not supposed to be because of their skin color. That's what I'm frustrated about.
Well, you can go through any community and you can see virtually every level of socioeconomics levels in just about any community. You've got people who are white, who are black, who are Asian, who are you know, whatever. I mean, take the whole rainbow there. You can go through any community, and you have those who are in poverty, and then you have those who are have some affluence and wealth, and everything in between. And there's the same colors are on both ends of that thing.
Yeah.
So it's not the color. It's your willingness to work. Some of the most highly intelligent people I know of do some of the stupidest things that, you know. That
okay, I'm trying. I really am. I'm trying, but it happens. What am I going to do? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But, you know, it's like, I forgot who said it, but, you know, just because you have an education doesn't mean you're not an idiot. And it's what you do and how you put yourself together. I mean, you can even break it down even further into a family unit. You can have brothers and sisters who are raised in the same environment, who, you know, had the same everything growing up, the same discipline or non-discipline, the same everything, and you'll have one that'll turn out to be highly successful. And another one that's, you know, skirting the law at every turn, you know, and just bumping the bottom and getting by. And I know that, you know, in not my brothers and sisters, but in family that I have, you know, that's the case in some cases with brothers and sisters that one or more will just do, you know, absolutely fantastic. And then you got another that will be, you know, on the bottom of the whole thing.
And Jimmy Carter, Billy Carter. I rest my case.
Well, yeah. And it's a matter of what's inside you and your own personal drive and your taking responsibility for your own self. And that's where to my way of thinking, that's what makes the difference right there, is how you choose, make the choices that you make within yourself, because you can come out of any environment and you can either, go to the top, or you can stay on, go to the bottom. If you were there's people that were born on the top and go to the bottom. It's not just a one way street there. So it's all about who you are and your character, and people are born with, whatever characteristics they're going to have. And people can take, like I said, the same environment, the same circumstances. One do great, one not. So it's all a personal choice, is the way I look at it.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because the personal choice of people that choose to believe in this, quote, systemic racism, not knowing that it's all part of Marxism, it's all part of an overall strategy to undermine this country and set us against each other. Whereas the one nice thing about America is the uniting of all of us. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what language you start with. It doesn't matter, anything about you, tall, short, fat, thin. You come to this country with different religions, different nationalities, different customs, different food. And you can all be Americans as long as you assimilate. Okay, and we've lost the assimilation. We've lost the value in being American and, whatever you came here with, whatever you started with. And the same thing with people in this country. I mean, there are ethnic groups, religious groups, all kinds of folks. You've got Amish, you've got, Mennonites, you've got all kinds of folks, just to pick a couple of religious minorities, who are everybody as American as, I don't know, pick a group. And I don't even like to group. This is where I get lost in this stuff and why it so frustrates me, because I see the value of being an individual, because I feel I am an individual. I'm not really part of a lot of different groups, although if I think about it, that actually has changed. So there's a lot going on here that is just very, very, very strange to me. But I want to go back to sort of Creek history before, or American Indian history in general, before the European incursion. Did the Creek, when a different tribe came up, cross paths, go, look, red men? was there any value to skin color or any merit placed on differences in skin color between different American Indian nations, or did it even matter?
That was a European concept.
Okay.
That wasn't here prior to the European incursion.
Okay.
And if you look across the spectrum, the skin tones from different parts of the country were different. Because the people came from different directions, that migrated into this continent, over the centuries or thousands of years. So, there were, the darker skin tones were influenced by the explorers that came over from Mali in Africa and came into Brazil and South America. And then you've got the, there's evidence that the Vikings came, into the northeast part of this country. And then, of course, you got the Bering land strait, where people of Asian descent came across that way. And then there's also evidence of people coming across the Pacific Ocean. So you had there was a melting pot here from the get-go. And so you've got all these different skin tones that were already here. And
well, different faces too. And it's fascinating you should say this, because, I look around and I've been to Alaska. So I've met Athabascans and Inuit. We got the chance to fly up north of the Arctic Circle to a little place called the Anaktuvuk Pass. And so being able to see different people, and I've met, For lack of convention, American Indians or Native Americans, excuse me, which is the term you're wondering why we're not using that term. Well, we'll explain that again someday. But the point is that the folks I've met who were Lakota Sioux and Apache and Navajo and Seminole and what's up north, Narragansett, and again, the Inuit and California Native folks, you know, look very different. Okay. You know, and it's almost like if we applied modern day cultural Marxist racism to American Indians before white people got here, you know, you would see, well, you're darker skinned than I am, you know, then I'm better than you. You know, I mean, this is why I wanted to bring this up. Because there was a time when we had very different people, very different faces, very different skin colors, completely different everything, as different as any place you can think of, all right? And yet, skin color wasn't a factor. No. It was cultures, who you were, as your tribe, your nation, yeah.
Well, and you come back again to, you know, if you want to see what can happen to you, look at what happened to the Indian. And that was the thing of the European incursion. You know, in the beginning, there was acceptance of the Indians by the Europeans, and they actually saw them as an asset and, you know, a good thing. And then they wanted the to have the land, take possession of the land. And so they went right into the playbook that still is going on today, that if you want to take something away from somebody, then the first thing you do is demonize them, you know, and make them dehumanize them, is what they actually tried to do back then, so that it wasn't such a big deal to kill one. And so, you know, and that's, you look at, bring that forward to today, and it's still got the same thing going on.
Yeah, now it's just a little different. It's like the I talked about the it seems the segregation has reversed from white Democrats demonizing black Americans to now they almost have a black supremacist movement, you know, Black Lives Matter, things like that, demonizing white people as oppressors. You know, and it's like all white people are racist, all white people are oppressors. You're just born with it. You can't change it. There's nothing you can do about it. Well, I reject that. You know, please put me in a diversity class. Please, you know, just somebody put me in one. I can't wait. You want to have some fun? You know, throw me in your class, because I reject all of it. You know, and we have to start rejecting this. But there's a certain white guilt that people think that they can't, you know, do anything about it. Let me play something for you. That I don't know. Have you heard my January White Sale recording that I made way back when during the lockdown? I don't think you've heard this.
I don't remember, but go ahead.
This is like the ultimate in political, you know, uncorrectness. This would get me banned from virtually everything, every site, if this show were as popular as I know it's going to be one day. But I'll be right back in about 3 minutes. Here it is, America, the answer to riots, brutality, and all our racial problems. The return of the January White Sale. Are you a guilt-ridden white person? Are you a person of no color? Do you want to finally assuage that guilt for slavery, the Civil War, the KKK, and black people sitting at the back of the bus? Well, here is your long-awaited answer. The Black Lives Matter Department of Reparations has come up with the perfect solution. The return of the January White Sale. Now, in years past, this was a big deal. After Christmas, sheets, towels, pillowcases, and other white linens were sold with their biggest discount of the year. In today's new normal world, however, things are going to be very different. Because Black Lives Matter is changing the original white sale, and now they are actually going to be auctioning off and selling white people. You, white, guilt-ridden, ashamed of your whiteness, complete cowards, bowing your heads, kneeling, raising your hands like at a revival meeting, you with your eyes cast down, you whimpering liberals hoping to buy your way out of a debt of guilt that can never be fully repaid, because no leftist of color wants you to. You will have the chance to experience what no black person experiences in the United States today. Slavery. Yeah, that's right. Slavery. Isn't this great? You will be on the cutting edge of social justice, and you will save the taxpayers some $14 trillion of reparations national debt. Black Lives Matter has gone to a lot of trouble to erase our history and remake society so guilty white people can finally feel free of their white supremacy. George Soros and Bill Gates have already created the Venture Capital Fund to establish Race-Bait Consulting, Incorporated, which will be handling the actual white person sale in January. So, who is available for purchase? Oh, and part of the deal is that white people can't be bought by other white people. That would defeat the whole theme of the event. Anyway, to the question. Your basic rifle on the pickup truck, racist, sexist, Islamophobe, Neanderthal, redneck male, is probably not going to sit around and be put in an auction, even if they will be well cared for by their new owners.
What we will have available are liberal, surrendering, grilly man metrosexuals and emotionally distraught and disillusioned feminists, both of whom have already knelt before a designated agent of Black Lives Matter to confess their white privilege. So how do you guilt-ridden white people sign up for the January white sale? It's easy. Contact your local chapter of Black Lives Matter, show up at a rally with a flag saying, take me for the January white sale, or simply sign up at the next mass kneeling confession of white privilege coming to a neighborhood near you. The new January white sale is made possible by a grant from Racebait Industries, Incorporated, and put on by the new normal, new improved Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up everything I have to say on this subject. Okay, I've left you speechless, huh? I do have my moments. Oh, there's
you
the last one.
You have left me speechless once again.
This is what happens when you lock me down. I don't get angry. I get creative. But let me read some of this this nonsense here. I'm curious to react, not necessarily as chief of the Cree tribe, but just in general, just as what's going on today. So this is a post in the City of Milton site. I don't see it there anymore, so I found it in another place. This is tonight. This is the city council meeting. Was a great example of systemic racism. And they mentioned the people they're accusing. I'm going to leave the names out. Amongst the candidates were three overqualified African-American candidates, yet, yada, 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 voted their friend, a white candidate, in not once but twice in two different seats. I never speak on negative stuff, but these people have to know that what they did is not right. Our community has to pay attention to these things and not allow them to go on. Otherwise, we will have no voice nor representation at all. Racism doesn't mean you don't like me because I'm black. However, because I am black, I am overlooked regardless of my qualifications. That is such nonsense. Other people did it, were well qualified, maybe even better qualified, and should have been selected, yet they were not. So again, clear example of systemic racism. We can agree to disagree. I don't expect anyone to understand how I should feel about this situation. I appreciate those of other races who have shown your frustration with the injustices. I appreciate you not sweeping it under the rug. So in other words, black people good, white people bad, white people can't understand black people. You know, and I hear this crap every day. You know, it goes all over the place, and we are never, ever going to get anywhere until people start standing up and saying, this is a bunch of nonsense. You know, I don't care if the entire Milton City Council is black. That would be fine as long as they're good for the city. You know, it doesn't matter to me. In fact, here's an idea I had just a couple of days ago. Unfortunately, I can't post on Facebook because I've got a bunch of leftists, you know, made this bogus bullying claim and said, because I actually corrected all their lies, venom, vitriol, and all the crap they were spewing out. But I thought, wouldn't it be fascinating if the GOP, the Republican Party, ran an entire slate of conservative black candidates in the 2022 midterms? I think that would be a fascinating thing to watch because the left would be absolutely lost. They wouldn't know what to do. And I'm sure there are tons of good qualified black candidates to do that. Now, obviously, I'm playing the race card myself, but it is an intriguing thought. Or maybe they should talk about doing that. You know, I don't know. But this whole thing just bothers me. You know, and this idea of systemic racism that, you know, that race is not a weapon. And we've got to stop using, I don't even like the concept of race, you know, but this is where we are now. It's the class warfare of Marx that is not able to be used here because, you know, we have a big middle class. So you don't have the bourgeois, the aristocracy, the proletariat in the same ways as Marx did. So you have black people, white people, you know, something else. You can explain that to the folks. But that's the thing is they tried the class warfare, but it doesn't really work because of our middle class, which they're trying to get rid of and then probably reinstitute a class war. But right now the race war seems much more effective. And apparently with a lot of people, it's working because it's permeated our government and it's permeated people's beliefs that, you know, that diversity means different skin colors rather than different thoughts and different ideas. And that's the real problem. With that, I turn it back to you.
It's always been that those seeking power would try to divide and conquer. I mean, that goes back to Julius Caesar's, a quote from him, I believe, of divide and conquer, somebody back in that era. So that's always been a tactic, and it's just it continues to be used. And you have those who are pawns in the that are used by powerful, the more powerful to try to get their agenda accomplished. And if you look at any of this thing that's going, anything that's going on like this, if you go back deep enough into the movement or the whatever, you're gonna start seeing money. People gaining wealth and power, and that's the whole thing. It's very, very deep where these things actually start. I don't believe they're just a superficial thing that starts on the surface in a, you know, in a subdivision somewhere. I think that they're very orchestrated from a very deep place in the power base of this of the country and the world.
Yeah, it's interesting when you say that because, you know, corporations are giving billions, literally billions, to Black Lives Matter. And I got an article here that it says Marxist BLM Black Lives Matter leader buys $1.4 million home in L.A. enclave, which apparently is full of white people. Big surprise, all right? So what this follows is the traditional Marxist elitist idea that everybody is equal who is equally oppressed, which is like 99.9% of the people, and the top 0.1%. The elite, the natural rulers, the people that rise to the top of this corrupt system, they get everything. They get all the spoils. You look at Venezuela, same thing. You look at Cuba, you know, those leaders live just fine. Everybody else is suffering. You look at China. You know, any place where communism, Marxism has taken hold, you still have this ruling class of people. I think Brezhnev, remember, had like six limos and only 10% of Russians had a car at that point. And so it always seems that the people that you know protest the most about inequality seem to accumulate the most stuff. I mean, I don't see Jesse Jackson being poor. Yeah. So there's a lot of people race is the weapon. Race is the weapon of the cultural Marxist. And it's time to stop this nonsense as soon as possible. And I got another report. I got Pianca on the line too. I'm going to take him just for a minute quickly, and then I'll get to Jimmy Smith, who's also on the line as well. But I'm sure, Chancellor, you probably have to take off now. Any closing words, or have we pretty much covered everything?
My closing words are that we need to remember that we're all people, and in the Native American culture. When we say a prayer to Creator, we pray for our relatives. And our relatives are not only our people that we are born into the families of, but it's all people. It's all things. And when we get back to the point where we realize that anything and everything and everyone is connected, when we get back to that point, and then we can see that whatever is being done that we're doing that's hurting our relatives, we need to reverse that, to stop that, and go back to a place where there's unity and harmony. And it's a dream, but it was that way once. And so there's really not a good reason why it couldn't be that way again.
So I'm always optimistic, that, you know, and then you have to go.
And so, then I will say, Hutem Chihi Chathlis.
Hutem Chihi Chathlis, Mado. Thank you, sir, for another fascinating discussion. I really appreciate it.
Mado.
All right. And with that, we'll let Chief Dan Skyhorse of the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe go. I'll play something. I got a couple things going on here. So my two callers, Pianchi and Jimmy, just hang on. I'll be right back.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
All right, I'm going to make Jimmy Smith's line live. And Jimmy, we don't have to stick directly to the bottom of the half hour. We may extend a little bit more just because. You know, I've kind of covered my main topic, so the rest of the show we can pretty much do what we want. But I want to hear from Pianchi, who's on the line right now too. And Pianchi, you missed my January White Sale. I played my famous BLM tapes a few minutes ago. So if you want to check back on the show during the Creek Report, you know, feel free to listen to that. Pianchi, do you add to our discussion here?
Oh, yeah, I was enjoying your conversation. I just bought a new deck of cards, and I see I only got 51, and I went through them. I'm missing the race card. I thought maybe you could let me have one of them.
No, listen, I'm the anti-race card here. You know, the title of the show, Black is not a color. Black is a color, not a race weapon. And so we've been happily discussing, starting with our Milton City Council and systemic racism. It's like, you didn't vote the black people in. You're all a bunch of racists. You know, you voted white people. You know, why would you do that? The white, more oppressive folks. And it's just, I am so sick of this. It's driving me crazy. Anyway, I'm not going to go over the whole thing again from the beginning of the show, but, you know, feel free to listen. But, systemic racism is cultural.
One.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're not the only one to get criticized. I heard person make mention that Detroit had a white mayor, and they criticized blacks for voting a white mayor. Shelby County in Tennessee has a white representative, Congressman Stephen Cohen, and he's white. He's been voted in several times, and the Congressional Black Caucus won't allow him to join, even though his constituency is way majority black. Congressional Black Caucus won't let him join because he's white.
Well, that raises the question, should the Congressional Black Caucus exist? I mean, I'm sick of racial caucuses. We, you know, it was one of the chief justices, not I think in the current crop, that said the only way to stop racism is to stop, you know, racially classifying people. You know, that's where it begins. And so it's a huge problem, but now I want to talk to you about this too, because we need to do something on black supremacy, of the reversal of segregation, of the Democrats using, you know, what used to be the suppression of black Americans with segregation, you know, in the South, to now the war on white people. It's like white people are the oppressors. White people need to have things taken away. White people need to, you know, who's this that put your life on hold? Was that Obama? Something like that, you know, or one of his you know, his folks. But it's still leftism. No matter what you call it, it's leftist Democrats, you know, segregation of Jim Crow law, and leftist Democrats segregating now, you know, advancing, you know, what seems to be a black supremacy agenda with Black Lives Matter, you know, over white people. But it's still the same old thing, identifying people as white or black and putting them against each other, you know, when in the meantime, destroying the country, you know, when nobody's looking. That's the distraction.
Well, a lot of that is carrying on with the news. I noticed when they was making a report on the incident with the lieutenant in Virginia, and the news media made mention of the governor wanting to have the state patrol to investigate, and the news caster said Governor Northrup, a Democrat, then he went on the call. The lieutenant was in a car that was a vehicle that had tinted windows. So how could the police officer know the color of his skin? And before anything would go on further, they would claim that it was profiling a black person. So if these attacks, this nonsense, or should I say this, it's a plan, a certain effort is coming from all directions. And people need to be able to identify and call it out.
That's what I'm doing. Yeah. Let me get Jimmy in on the conversation. Jimmy Smith is with Concerned Veterans for America, and we're going to sort of slide into his topics. And Pianchi, you're welcome to join me again, or just stick around. We'll get back to this. I've got some things from Professor Swain, which I find very interesting, on this cultural Marxism use of racism to divide us. But Jimmy, do you want to weigh in on this a bit, or do you want to get onto your topics?
Well, so to real quick weigh on this, this is something that our leaders at CVA has basically emphasized, the fact that there really is one group that has learned to ignore race and fully work on accomplishment of the mission, and that's the military, in which we have people from every background you can imagine, working together to get a goal accomplished. I mean, if there's ever an example for the rest of the world to follow, you know, the United States military. So when it comes to race, we focus on the mission and getting things accomplished. And I think if the nation would have that same goal of improving the nation by focusing on the mission of what's best for America and stop dabbling in the issues of race-baiting politics, I think we'd have a stronger nation.
Yeah, I'm going to go into this more. I found an article on one of the Obama administration executive orders that basically required racial division and racial advancement and all kinds of other stuff that really screwed things up, really messed things up for us here. And so my initial question is, I mean, that sounds great. I mean, you know, what the military's done, is there a way to get that philosophy more into the rest of government and so that they stop doing everything with race? Or even should we just get rid of racial classifications entirely, which is my idea? Because I don't like the whole concept.
Well, again, you know, the military is merit-based. If you perform well, you get promoted. And that's where, you know, we are very strong on our very basic beliefs in our organization that Concerned Veterans of America, we are the metrics of what you do as your performance depends on how you'll be looked at. And nobody cares what color you are. And I think we are very vocal, and we're doing things like connecting with other groups. And that's how you do it. You take examples of good things like the military, like groups like ours, and you connect them in leadership positions throughout the nation, and it will allow people to do that. But yeah, it's
makes
one
sense.
Of those things. It's difficult. It is really a difficult issue because people are making making race and more of an issue. Racism is an issue, but race is not the issue, because people will always have an issue with not being comfortable with groups that they don't know. If you look at Larry Elder communicates very well about this, and John Stossel has done very good, and Ami, oh, I can't remember his name. He did a Fox News special on
Ami Horowitz. I think. He did this video, right? We went to Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, and found all basically these racist, you know, white people that said that, well, black people can't get IDs, and well, they have trouble, you know, knowing where the DMV is and registering to vote, so we have to have all, you know, these voter suppression laws, you know, can't go. And then he goes to Harlem, right? And he interviews, especially, I remember this one woman in particular who is a web programmer. I mean, she designs websites. She's a web, you know, graphics person. And she says, what do you mean talking about? She says, I make my whole career on the web. This is ridiculous. What do you mean I don't know the internet? I don't know how to register to vote. I don't know how to do all this other stuff. And they interviewed other people too. And just the juxtaposition of the basically the racist white liberals, you know, with black citizens in Harlem. It was just hysterical the way I could send you the video. It's just amazing. So I know who you're talking about. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, actually, I posted that on my social media. So on my personal side, so stepping away from the official CVA position.
Yep,
you
know, you can
CVA,
do that.
Like I said, is very, very factual on we believe the military is the epitome of the example where people are looked at on their merits and not on their race. So on the personal side, you know, I've mentored many young men and women who are straight, gay, liberal, conservative, black, white, Hispanic. And, you know, the want for all of those people that I mentored wasn't to be looked at for their race. It was to what can I do to better my future? And that's what a lot of people need to do is if you truly believe like we do that everybody is fully capable, as demonstrated in that video, and I do have that video on my social media.
Okay.
You know, everybody's fully capable, and we need to get away from this demagoguery and start engaging young people to focus on what's better for them, their community, and the nation as a whole, regardless of what they're being told by the media about how they should feel. And what you find is that in Seattle right now, some of my mentees are out there. So they're young black conservatives. Mind you, they will never go out there and say, I'm a black conservative. They're just conservatives in the community that believe in certain policies that are engaging people in Seattle. And it's not because they're black. It's just because this is their core belief and they want to articulate their values and they want to work to make wherever they're at a better community. So, and, you know, getting back to the issue, though, of you know, the VA and stuff like that, I'm hoping that none of these policies ever get pushed down to the VA, because you hear them wanting to, not the VA, but doctors in certain groups wanting to start segment care by race and trying to equal healthcare by race. And if you look at the VA system, the VA doesn't care what race you are. They're going to treat you for your combat disability or your disability regardless of race.
You know, that's a topic I'm looking more into right now, this idea. And I guess a couple of Harvard professors were proposing that, I guess, Black Americans are more affected by COVID and because of the racial discrimination aren't being treated as well, don't have the same access to vaccines and some of this other stuff. They're doing a racial analysis, which is bogus to me to begin with just because I don't believe in racial analysis. But they're doing this
you look at that, Greg, you look at that article, and what it specifically says, and again, I post that on my social media, it specifically talks about what it is self-advocacy. So go back to the VA again. The VA has portals and avenues and things like that to where people of all color know better how to advocate for their health care. And let me tell you, veterans, if there's anybody that advocates to ensure they're getting the quality health care, the veterans community. And again, we are the example. If that community feels that there are people in minority communities that are being hardest hit by COVID, and within their own proclamation they actually state that it is an advocacy issue, then let's look at, again, the military, veterans who are currently getting their health care and making sure that they earn the care they earned is the care they get. So we are the epitome of how to work together to get everything from a better life in the world to the health care that you deserve.
Yeah, interesting. If you want to post any of those on my personal page, I'm having an ideological discrimination, you know, battle with Facebook right now because a bunch of leftist trolls, you know, complained about me to Facebook after being on my page, which I let them on. And then they started complaining and saying I was a bully and harassing me. But they're reviewing that decision now, so it's kind of interesting. Let's get Pianki back on the line. Like I say, you're welcome to stay the rest of the show, Jimmy. I don't know if you have that time, but I hope you do because I know you have more stuff to present.
I do for you today.
Okay, good. All right, so then we can kind of go more freewheeling. I hate to turn off a good subject. You know, I don't like to be like regular formatted radio. Well, time's up. Let's go to Biff's car repair. You know, no, sorry. Pianki, you're back on the line.
Yeah, I was going to tell him that this racism is not the skin color, it's the act. And regardless of your skin color, anyone can commit the act against another person, especially a U.S. citizen where you violate the civil rights. And believe it or not, what's called racism is not always illegal. But when it becomes illegal and you violate someone's civil rights, that particular act, well, then it's wrong.
You should give an example of that. I know you've done it before, but I just wanted to, just for our folks listening today.
Well, a black person can be a racist. A black person can come up and smack somebody white, and or they can push them out of line. If a white person do it, they're going to be called a racist. But black people have these qualified acts that goes along with power, then they can be a racist if you listen to what some people say. That's a bunch of hogwash. It's not true. There's many cases of where blacks have done the same exact thing where the white person was called a racist. Well, then the act that the black is committing is racist also.
Oh yeah, and then the Marxists will come along and say, well, the black person is the oppressed in this society, so because of their skin color, they're innocent of the same thing that a white person might do in the same situation. Because and the white person is obviously guilty because they're the oppressor. So you get this whole oppressor oppressed, you know, class warfare. So that the race is used to get back to a Marxist class war instead of having economic classes, they have racial classes, but it's still the same class warfare. And as long as we engage in that, and as long as we tolerate that kind of division within us, we're never going to get anywhere. And this is where the big problem comes in. But it's getting worse. Yeah, go ahead.
The last event that they had at the Capitol was this person killed one of the Capitol police.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's black. And they made
and Muslim
of some of the following he had. Well, that would make him a black supremacist.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a white person and you make reference of his ideology and the following he has, he would be called a white supremacist.
Yeah, I need to do a show on black supremacy. I need to look more into this. And I don't want to take all the time right now to do it, but because I want to get to Jimmy's, report for Concerned Veterans for America. And again, Jimmy, you know, you can always step into both roles. Whenever you want to talk as you, just say you're talking as you. And when you're going to go back to represent CVA, you can do that too. So you could be multitasking, multifunctional, whatever you want to do. That's what makes it
interesting. I come from a large family, so that's never a problem for me to have multiple discussions all at the same time. Matter of fact, I grew up poor, and it was quite often the way we entertained ourselves. But, you know, the key thing I think that I find in the community, so as a former representative, as somebody who's active in veterans issues, and just somebody who's outspoken, what I find is that people are looking for leadership in the community to deal with these issues. So there was a young gentleman who had racial issues in the past in which he was told that, you know, he couldn't be performing in school that well, getting A's and B's because he's black and obviously he's not smart enough. And this was made by another student, and it affected his whole life. It really did. And that's where people have to understand that we need to root out that mentality from the very beginning of a young person's life. And if we can get rid of that mentality. Now, if he was doing good or bad just simply because of their skill set and stuff like that, well, that's where, you know, you look past whether they got an A because they're black. You say, well, you know, you're really good at this, and that's the reason you're more successful than I am. And that's pretty much the root of why people turn to race, I feel, mind you, and having never had to deal with that. You find people that are implying things. So that student implied that he, you know, was getting help because he was black and he couldn't be that smart because he was black. I was at a car dealership years ago when I was in the military, and this little Ford Escort comes in, and these four gentlemen get out, and they are literally drooling over their car. Well, I was at that car dealership because when I drove in, I wanted to get a car, and right away, car dealer came out to me. Now, the car I drove in was a nicer car, and right away, it inferred that I had money. The car they drove in was a clunker car, and it inferred that they didn't have money. But it was four black men, and nobody went out to deal with them, to assist them. As soon as I showed up, they came up. And it was that mental image that I assumed was in somebody's head that they're not worth my time because I'm not going to make money because they're four young black men. I got up and left. They also didn't get the money from the well-to-do military paycheck that I had from a white guy. And that's where we need to take these kind of actions and recognize a lot of times what racism may be more than it's just an actual action. It may be an implied thought process about a group of people.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And there's a situation going in education, which you're mentioning earlier, that there's a pressure, I think, from fellow black students that if a black student does too well, they're, quote, acting white. And nothing could be more destructive, you know, because you can't change if you're black or if you're white. You can't, you know, you can't change your skin color, and you shouldn't. But the idea that you are being made to feel guilty or you can't act a certain way or something because that means you're acting as another skin color would act, to me is another absurd, insane concept. But that goes on all the time.
Right. And you know, those are my personal experiences. And I'm sorry, was the man's name Packy or Jackie that you talked
about? Pianki. It took me a while to learn how
Pianki,
to pronounce it.
Pianki, I'm sorry.
Yeah. You tell us where your name comes from sometime, Pianki. Feel free. I like it.
What I was going to say, I kind of skipped my line now, but show, your mind's got to run 100 miles an hour to keep up.
We're driven by ADHD. This is the ADHD radio network. There's a reason I call it that. If you don't have ADHD, you're not going to keep up.
Oh, I was going to say is these excuses. See, another thing where I find people on the right, or conservatives, have to always come up with a definition that fits what the other side wants you to have. For instance, he just got to make a mention about education. Mm-hmm. Now, I heard that in the SAT test, the black students are spotted 310 points, whereas an Asian student is deducted like 140 points or something like that before the test even began. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not a reflection really on the black student. You have to look at the cause and the effect. And sometimes cause and effect is true. And that's the education system from which the student came from did not prepare them. And we know that the Democrats are totally against educational changes like school choice and alternative schools where parents can make the decision of the environment that their student, their child, learns in. They are ridiculed. They are called all sorts of names when they want to do that, not by whites, but by blacks themselves.
Mm-hmm. Racism is everywhere, even amongst members of a race. Yeah, Jimmy?
Can I ask you a question? Because this is
sure.
something that I've had conversations with various friends in my community of all statuses. Do you feel that the gangster thug mentality that developed from the rap community, rap started off as this communications of this is how we feel about our situations to a, and I can't use the verbiage, but, you know, derogatory terms towards women, I'm not going to take anything from anybody. I'm going to get mine with guns and violence. Does he feel that that is basically holding young men and women back? And mind you, not just black people, but anybody who's of the gangster thug mentality. Does he feel that that is inhibiting success for people in that particular situation?
You guys can talk directly.
Absolutely.
You don't need me to intervene. You know, go ahead. You guys can just chat. Feel free.
Bianca? Absolutely. Absolutely, if your child is listening to that. There's another entertainer out there by the name of Cardi B, I believe it is. I finally found out her name. You should listen to this newest record that she has out. It is totally, it would put the ratings charts completely off the map. And when children hear these things, I even notice like my siblings sometimes, and they like to listen to the sports host. What's the one? Stephen B, I believe his name, or maybe you pronounce. But you listen how they talk to each other. It's loud, it's fast, and so on and so on and so on. Then you see that going on amongst the young people. They talk, they loud, they fast, and they don't use logic when they speak on certain things.
It's
like when you hear blacks constantly, some, not all, they want to say that the reason why you see young people acting the way is because of slave syndrome.
Wow.
Oh yeah, that's the the slavery is in your DNA. Well, if that were the case, then my Greek roots would make being Athenian, the blonde-haired Greeks as opposed to the Spartans would make me a descendant of Socrates or something like that. So I should be walking around in a toga and getting all that wonderful Greekness. I'm sorry, folks, I don't feel it. I don't know what you're talking about. This genetic transfer of slavery is as big a myth as cultural Marxism, racism, the whole bit. It's all a bunch of nonsense. It's designed to get power and money, as Chief Dan Skyhorse said earlier. Yeah.
Hey,
and when the young people
are
told it over and over and over again, that the white man won't let you do this, well, I'd be doggone.
Yeah, white man won't let me succeed either. What if I ran around saying the white man wouldn't let me succeed? I should try that sometime.
Well, when the time comes for you to act and perform, you're going to have that in the back of your mind. And believe me, it does stay back there. It is in your mind once you have implanted that in someone's mind. And either they will work through it, either they will perform and see, well, that was superstitious. It's not true. But you got black groups, individuals, spokespersons that carry that narrative. And you'd be surprised how it affects people.
Oh, yeah, believe me, I know. Listen, I want to hold you up for a bit. I want to get back to Jimmy's report because I know we sort of delayed it, but it's been a fabulous discussion, and we can get back to it. Let me tell you one thing real quick. We'll be back with Jimmy's report.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
See the fun I have here? Jimmy, back to you. Let's get to our CVA report in here before we get too far lost. And we can always come back to this, as we will, I'm sure, on different days. Go ahead, sir.
Well, and again, Greg, I always appreciate coming on. And so, yes, let's put on my official CVA hat and get into this discussion. So one of the things that, you know, we're working on helping address this issue with the VA. So the VA gets, you know, billions of dollars. It has 9.2 plus million enrolled veterans in its system. It has 1,200 medical facilities. And yet, one of the key problems is that we're seeing millions, almost 20 million, canceled and delayed appointments. We start to see where in the past the VA has, during the COVID, scaled back the community cares program and so many things that are just predominantly a problem in the VA. And so the point that of the information I sent to you earlier, the point that I would like to make is that we need the VA to fulfill their duty in following the laws. So as an example, the Mission Act is a law. Okay, it's not a suggestion. It's not some kind of administrative rule. It's an actual law signed, a bipartisan law, and that's important, signed by President Trump. So that means all of Congress came together bipartisan, said this is the best thing to do for veterans. Let's move forward on this. And the VA decided to scale back the community cares program. So here's a law that says you will do community cares, okay, which came out in 2019 from the law. And during the COVID, they decided on their own, without governmental oversight, to scale this back. And this has been something that we addressed even before they start to do it, that the community cares program is actually the way to move forward, actually the best way to handle the pandemic. Us and some congressional members wrote the president and the then secretary of the VA a letter and said, the community cares program is the way to do it. Not only that, it is the law. So fundamentally, we were proven right. But the VA has issues of not following rules. And one of the most unique examples is that within the audit from the VA, so the Veterans Health Administration under the VA has an Office of Audits and Evaluations, and they requested an audit of appointment management during the COVID-19. And here's a thing that just shows how government thinks or thinks wrong. So the VA issued guidelines on March 22nd, including instructions to not, let me say that again, to not cancel or discontinue consults. Now, consults would be the doctors outside of the VA, okay? Consults, you know, generally created when a provider requests new specialty care for a patient. As an example, if I need a MRI, an open MRI, and the VA doesn't have one, they would go to a consult. So they specifically said during the COVID issues, do not discontinue or cancel a consult. So what we find is that subsequently, various elements of the VA canceled almost 750-plus consults. So they get directions from their supervisors not to cancel these consults or discontinue them. And then fundamentally, the subordinate elements of the VA cancel or discontinue the consults. So the VA isn't following the Mission Law or the Mission Act law and using the Community Cares Program. And the subordinate elements within the VA aren't listening to what the higher elements of the VA are directing them to do. And we wonder why we keep seeing the cyclical aspect of healthcare improves, nobody's paying attention, healthcare declines. And this is where it's really important because there's various audits that are done by the VA. Now, they contract with a private entity to do it, so they're unbiased. And what you find is that, again, they don't listen to what they're supposed to do. They don't listen to the rules. And even if you go into just a general audit that was done from the 2019 to 2020 audit that was done, basically it says, regarding noncompliance with laws and regulations, the organization that did the audit said, substantial noncompliance with federal financial management system requirements and the United States standard general ledger at transition levels under federal management reported in more than 10 years, okay? So there's substantial issues of noncompliance in dealing with the financial things. And here's where these two things are just examples where they're not following the federal laws under, you know, bills that are passed in Congress and signed by the president. They're not following their own rules, and they're not following the regulatory aspect of what they're required to do by other laws when it comes to finances. And this is why...
Surprise, surprise. Yes. Well, I'm reading, I'll get your email here too. We're talking about the Federal Managers Financial Integrity Act, and there's a couple of other acts that you have listed here. What it comes down to, really, I'll just tell you one word, it's oversight. Mm-hmm. So someone's dropping the ball in oversight, and this happens all the time because there's a revolving door that we've had several guests talk about this. That, you know, you may start in Congress at the staff level, and then you go to the committee staff. And the committee staff, you know, people make careers of being on congressional committee staff. They have amazing power to write bills, to bring up issues, because the people who are in office are too busy, you know, running for re-election from the day they get elected, and they're fundraising. So they spend most of their time fundraising. The committee staff are the ones who actually write the bills. So those are the people you want to get to know. But people get tired of that, and they want to go from the committee staff to either their own elective office, or they want to go to the administration. And so they'll go to the office of the president, or they'll go to some regulatory agency. In this case, the VA. All right. So they go to the VA, and of course their job there is to spend money and do the bidding of the health companies that work with the VA that have the big government contracts, because they want to get the job. You know, once they leave the VA, they want to go, you know, work for maybe one of the big pharma companies or one of the any of the many companies that are working with the Veterans Administration to give health care or other, you know, services to veterans. And so this is the pattern. They end up as the big corporate exec. You know, and then they want to be a lobbyist for that corporation. That's where they make their real money, lobbying Congress, the very people that they knew, you know, way back when they were on committee staff or an elected representative. It's such a, you know, revolving door. It becomes this reinforcing, isolated network. So you can probably identify, you take a look at the leaders of the VA, and there's probably a very good chance they have that kind of a history, of a resume. I'd be very curious. You know, if you know personally, leaders in the VA, especially VA Health, that came from Big Pharma. You know, came from a regulatory agency, maybe FDA. And before that, they were, you know, committee staff. They were working in Congress on Capitol Hill and had some time with either the Office of the President or these other regulatory agencies. Have you ever traced the people to see, you know, where they came from, you know, as their experiences?
But we have the
how much
audits,
of a bubble
so
they're in?
We have the audits, and we can see some of the information. But the key thing in all this, though, is those mm-hmm. people are transactional. That's what you're talking about, the transactional people who are trying to get, you know, to move up in life and things like that. What we find is when you look at the audit, it's just mm-hmm. the mentality of the organization is so in depth to where the priority is not truly the veteran, okay? And that's where the problem is. The priority should always be the veteran. Greg, when you have the
ability what is the priority?
To have a veteran, well, it seems to be keeping their jobs, because they do. If you look at the VA scandal, the only person that was fired out of the VA scandal, and I could be wrong, so please look this up, was somebody who was fired due to financial mismanagement. So we had hundreds of veterans who died because of lack of care. Nobody gets fired. We have now almost 20 million canceled or delayed appointments. I'll bet nobody gets fired. We have over 700,000 canceled or discontinued consults. I'll bet nobody gets fired. And that's the problem. There's no accountability for anybody who makes these decisions. So there's specific direction. Don't cancel or discontinue consults. They are subsequently then canceled or discontinued to the point of, you know, almost 750 plus thousand, okay? And basically, nobody's ever held accountable for these actions. Somebody made a specific choice to ignore regulations within the VA. Nobody's fired. The VA specifically makes a choice to scale back a program that's a law, okay, a successful program at that. That's a law. And basically, nobody's held accountable. And that's the problem. Nobody's fired. Nobody's held accountable. We have audits. I sent you two different audits. And in both of those are glaring things. When you hear the terms like substantial noncompliance, that should be followed by these individuals were subsequently fired, but they're not. Nobody's held accountable.
Yeah, yeah. I have to take more look at the studies. I apologize for not going through more of this. This is huge. But, you know, when you have a situation where you've got a government that is basically illegal, you got a fraud in the White House. This is me talking, not CBA. You got a fraud in the White House. You've got a nation that tolerates so far, except for, you know, a few of us out there trying to fight this battle, an illegal president. you know, how are you going to do something at the VA at this point? We have bigger problems. Not to take anything away from the VA, but you know, the culture of the VA is a microcosm of the culture of the entire federal government tolerating an illegitimate administration. You know, if we can't straighten that out, how the hell are we going to get down to the level of the VA to straighten them out and change their culture and bring in the military merit system that you talk about, which would be perfect at the VA? Go ahead.
Well, so, and that's truthfully the example. So if you think about it, though, this was all done during COVID, which predominantly was under President Trump. President Trump signed the bills, put in the actions, hired the Secretary of the VA and all these things, and it still happened under this. This is so ingrained at every single level. And it makes me think back to the days when we were kids and you had Apollo 13, and when they said, hey, you know, we have a problem here. Basically, all of NASA came together and got those astronauts back safely. They don't have that mentality in the VA. They don't have the mentality of pull everything together and do whatever they can to save those lives. We have veterans who have had mental health appointments canceled, okay, because all those 19.7 million, some of them are mental health appointments and stuff like that. How many veterans lost their lives because of that is a question that can't be answered because you'll never know. And fundamentally, when you find these kind of things happening, there's not the mentality in the VA that we must pull everything together to save a life. When NASA had their tragedies, they pull everything together to save a life. When the VA has tragedies, they just ask for more money, and somebody in government writes another bill that doesn't fix it.
Yeah, but when NASA has a disaster, the whole world knows. You know, it's much more obvious. You know, it's like how many more people die on the highways in car accidents than airplane crashes? A lot more. But what makes the news? What gets the attention? Airplane crashes. You know, they grounded the 737 MAX, which I believe is faulty design for an airplane. You know, I used to be a flight instructor, so I know a little bit about the technology of airliners. But the thing is, that made huge news because two airliners crashed. Okay, so the thing is, what is it that's going to attract the attention of this? You need to personalize it. You need to tell stories of individuals, you know, and say, hey, this is what happened to this person. And if people see a personalized story, they go, oh, my God, that's terrible. You know, we need to fix the VA. Just the numbers, I think people lose sight of the numbers. It just doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
Right. And we are doing it. So, you know, like last week we spoke about myvastory.org. I mean, basically, we have created the portal for us to do that. So myvastory.org is the way for people. So if Piangi knows somebody that is a veteran and he can share myvastory.org with them, then that's how we do it. And we are doing it. So we have it on social media. We're out there. Matter of fact, I have a meeting coming up with various leaders of the state veteran service organizations. I've been going around. We talked to people at the Manatee Tea Party yesterday. So I'm pretty much on the road almost daily going throughout the state, and we have our regional directors, our engagement directors like Michaela and Liz over in Jacksonville and JC down in Tampa. So we are doing this, and we're slowly gaining momentum. But the key thing is that they need to be aware there is a portal that they can tell their story. So already we found that it isn't just Bay Pines that's having an issue. Lake Nona is having an issue. So we're starting to see more and more, and the more stories we get like this, and the more we can share that link to that site, the more we'll be able to build that base of knowledge that gives us the strength to actually force change. Because I can tell you that we have been able to get legislation changed, and we have drawn up so much attention to where the Mission Act was implemented. Now we need to take it to the next step. And what I mean by next step is, so as an example, I don't know if you know who Congressman Greg Stube is, himself a veteran. He has what's called the Veterans True Choice Act. And matter of fact, I'm lining up an interview with him, hopefully, about this, because this would allow the veterans who are happy with the VA, and I'll have to tell you personally, I've never personally had a problem with the VA, okay? So allow people like me to stay with the VA, but allow those who feel they want a choice for their health care to be able to pick almost like a TRICARE, which is basically, you know, being retired, I have what's called TRICARE. It would be the same thing. They would just basically have the insurance through the government that allows them to go to a private sector individual so that they're able to keep up with all their appointments and deal with all that stuff. And it gives the veterans that choice. And it's not to privatize the VA, because I'm still going to go get my annual checkups and my service-connected disability through the VA. But for those who want to have a choice, this gives them true choice. And it would prevent those individuals from falling into the issues with the VA that we have consistently seen and starting to see again.
Makes a lot of sense. What's really great is that you're really on top of all these issues. And I have just tons of them flowing in my head all the time, you know, as various different bills, including my own, you know, 20 bills that I'm working on, and with the, you know, and with about 80 more behind it. So it gets, you know, really complicated. So feel free to mention the Mission Act and, you know, my VA story and things like that every time you're on, so that people get the message and go, oh, well, that's interesting. You can also post them on my page. You know, and I'm still thinking we should probably have a veterans page, but I know you're busy enough with stuff. I might just do that, or just put it on my page directly. I can't post on my own page for another 23 days because, like I said, I've got a bogus lockdown going on right now. It's crazy, but so I'm having all my friends post. I have the most active closed site I think there is, you know, because a bunch of people are posting really cool stuff, and it's really nice to have the friends I have, because you guys are great, and you just keep posting stuff on my personal page. You know, screw Facebook. You know, I need Facebook to get the word out, but everybody else is doing just fine, so thank you. So, yeah, post this stuff on, you know, because when I see it, then of course I'll be able to share it at some point, but other people will see it too, and it's just, it's much more, it's nice to have the visual reinforcement to the show that we're doing here. I don't know what you do about the culture, though. I think, you know, here's another example of what I'm talking about. I wrote Jay D'Onofrio's a whistleblower with the VA, and I have a couple other folks, Dr. Alice Buckley and Sean, I've forgotten his last name. These are people I've worked with before. We came up with a series of amendments to the Veterans Administration Whistleblower Protection Act that actually protects whistleblowers. Okay, so even within the VA, when they try and do something right, they still amended the bill so they could actually victimize the whistleblowers rather than protect them. So there's a bill that I don't know if you guys, you know, that's actually in Congress and the Veterans Affairs Committees and things like that. So writing the bills is only part of it. It's actually getting them through, getting the culture change, and getting people in the VA who actually have, you know, the idea of helping veterans first, not advancing their career to their next, you know, stepping stone up the government ladder to their corporation, to their lobbying position. So do you ever made recommendations on who you think would be good to run the VA, or at least the kind of person to staff the VA at the administrative management level? I mean, how far down do you want to go to restructure them, for example?
Right. Well, so one of the things is that, you know, there is clauses within the Mission Act to deal with some of that. But when it comes to CVA priorities specifically, whenever we're dealing with this, we just want full implementation of the Mission Act. And so we don't try to add in and spread ourselves too thin, so to speak. You know, there's only so much an organization can do between ending endless wars, this, and the runaway federal spending.
Yeah, if you just redefine the Mission Act real quickly, then I want to get into Biden's extension of our troops in Afghanistan until September 11th. Gee, I wonder how he picked that date. Anyway, what's the Mission Act specifically, so folks who want to look it up will know what it is?
Okay, so the Mission Act is a piece of legislation that was passed in 2018. Okay, again, it was bipartisan and something that it seems to be very rarely done.
Yeah.
And basically, the Mission Act allowed for better access and choice for veterans. So what we pushed for in the Mission Act was to allow for things like the creation of the Community Cares Program. So as an example, if I go to the VA clinic that's here in town, it's 15, 20, maybe at the most 30 minutes away, and I need additional follow-up care. So if my doctor looks at me and says, well, Jimmy, because I have bad knees from jumping out of airplanes, you know, you need an X-ray so we can see this. And you're more than welcome to drive up to the villages at any time and get your care. Okay, well, that's less than 20 days away, and then I can go to the villages clinic. But there are people within the state of Florida that don't have that opportunity. That clinic may be an hour away or may not be open for an appointment for them on a specialty that's, you know, not for another 30, 40 days. Well, the Mission Act actually scripted down to the point of you have to be able to access that by driving no more than 30 minutes. So if that clinic is open today for me to go to, but it's an hour and a half drive, I can request the community cares program and get that x-ray in my local community, because we've learned there's plenty of access in the local community. But also, if that clinic doesn't have an appointment for 20 or more days, they can also ask for the community cares program in their local community. And this has been something that, when it was properly being implemented prior to COVID, you started to see veterans talk about getting better health care. And the very first thing government did when COVID showed up was take a good program that was really starting to work as we moved towards full implementation, and they backed away from it. And that's where the problem is.
Well, I can tell you exactly why, and I think you know exactly why, too. So now, I thought the Community Cares Act was a separate act. I didn't know it was part of the Mission Act, and this is where it's good to have you on to kind of clear these things up. But obviously, you know, it's like they don't care if they treat – well, this, not that they don't care, but the idea that the certain veterans get treated badly, it's not as big a deal as losing the ability to care for veterans, because that's going to cost them, you know, money in the budget. And they'd rather fight for money in the budget and fight for control over veterans' health care, regardless of how good that control or how bad that control is, you know, that health care actually is, as long as they keep the control and keep the money, because that's what's important to bureaucrats. Whereas
but Greg, I would say it's full choice.
What's that?
Well, this is where they're wrong. I mean, this is okay. So that assumption by any bureaucrat is probably true. I'll tell you that. It's probably true. But historically, what we have seen in the last 10 years, so the spending in the last 10 years has seen that the VA has increased over 100%. Their budget has increased over 100%, basically doubled in the last 10 years. Now, in the recent...
And service is twice as good, right?
No, not at all.
What a surprise.
And don't get me wrong, again, the local clinic and my doctor has done good for me, but I'm not talking about people like myself. I'm talking about people who are veterans who aren't getting the care they earned. But recently, if you look under the stimulus packages, they're getting more money. Matter of fact, I think they're lined up to get an additional $2 billion because the Secretary of the VA asked for additional monies. And they will actually want to expand services under the VA, which is contrary to the intention of the Mission Act, which is to focus on what you do it well. So they want more money, and they want to expand services. Not only that, their budget and the projected budget from this president is to be an additional 8% increase for the year. Okay, and fundamentally, so they're going to have money thrown at them. And go back to our earlier discussions. They're already substantially not fulfilling their fiduciary duties of tracking the money and spending money, as by their own audits is demonstrated. Okay, but
well, what happened to the audit? I got the PDF now, and I'll probably read through it for next time. But what happened with the audit? Audits are there for a reason. They show discrepancies, they show problems, and they're supposed to, you know, instigate or inspire corrective action. Where's the audit now?
Well, so the secretary has had the audit. Matter of fact, he is the one who admitted that they're at 19.7 million canceled, delayed, or moved appointments. So he's obviously read this audit. But here's the thing. All they're doing right now is asking for more money to fix the issue instead of looking administratively at where they're having problems in-house. So it's not the fact that government should throw more money at them. It's the fact that what we're saying is that they're having – their own internal problems when they can't follow their own directions and implement the Mission Act fully. I mean, the first words out of the Secretary's mouth should have been, we need to fully implement the Mission Act. We need to restore the Community Cares Program. And basically, they need to then, you know, and this is where we haven't made a statement about this, but my thoughts are they need to then go back to that audit, both audits, okay, one for the actions in reference to the current COVID situation, but also to their annual audit, go to both of them and systematically look indoors and or in-house and find out why they're having problems before they really start asking for more money to fix things. They need to figure out what it is that should be fixed.
Yeah, it's like the money comes first and then figure out where to do it rather than having the priorities first and trying to decide how much it costs. I'm going to play something for 30 seconds, and then I want to ask you about COVID and the VA, so we'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener.
It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system.
So I got the executive summary right here, and it says very clearly, the COVID-19 pandemic has had a major impact on VA's mission of providing health care for veterans to the Veterans Health Administration, VHA, the VA Office of Inspector General, OIG, this is a good way to put it, OIG, conducted this review to assess VHA's appointment management strategies. They shouldn't have anything to do with each other. In fact, the fact that we had COVID should actually increase, you know, because now you've got COVID to add to the list of things that veterans might need service for. But I think they use it as an excuse. They say, oh, no, we've got COVID. We can't meet. We have, you know, these new procedures. Everybody has to wear a mask. You know, keep your patients 6 feet apart in the waiting room. I mean, what kind of nonsense did they bring up with COVID, which had nothing to do with COVID and everything to do with just being lazy and not doing their job?
Well, so when it came to COVID, one of the big problems that they had were doing additional follow-ups. So they canceled these appointments. And normally what happens with canceled appointments, and I've had them, and my appointment times change. And they follow up with me, and they either send me a letter, they call me, they text me. I mean, it's wonderful with technology that they can reach you. But fundamentally, because or during the COVID, specifically in this very audit that you're reading, they talk about that from March 15th through March 15th through May 1st, 2020, that they found that there were nearly canceled 11.2 million appointments and needed to follow up on about 3.3 million of those cancellations, but they didn't. That's where the problem is. And the OIG recommended that that the Undersecretary of Health concerning the need for a VA to coordinate a well-defined rescheduling strategy. So there's people that are watching this, providing suggestions on how to fix these things. But then the question is why do these things recurringly come back and become a problem to where they need to be readdressed? And I'll, again, reflect on earlier statements where it talked about how they substantially have been ignoring the whole aspect of their duty, of their fiduciary duties, for years. So there are people who have been there historically. So even though the audits find this information, even though the OIG make recommendations, there are groups or there are portions of the VA that have had these kind of recommendations for, like, well, when it comes to financials, for more than 10 years. So think about it. We're suggesting policies.
There's no accountability.
They're not following the policies.
Yeah, there's no punishment. There's no disincentive. There's no, you know, firing. You know, you need to get rid of civil service. And like I said, we originally started our conversation, a merit-based system needs, you know, Concerned Veterans for America could design a merit-based system for the VA. That would be a model for the rest of government. You know, you could do that. You know, it's like this Office of Inspector General is within the VA. So the director of the VA is over the Office of Inspector General. What you need is to get this to the independent Office of Inspector General, if there is one, you know, that is not part of the VA, and let them do the report and hold these people accountable somehow. Fire them, doctor pay, put them in jail, you know, whatever the proper remedy is.
The good thing is that the Mission Act actually gives more strength to be able to do those kind of things, like fire people. Okay, so if you get a chance, I'll send you the Mission Act legislation as well.
Yeah.
But so the Mission Act created that ability, but we need to have members of Congress, again, are doing multiple things, and I get it, okay? And you can't have a commission on everything. And right now it seems like the entire system is overwhelmed, and regardless of what your thoughts are on about the overwhelming.
We got Veterans Affairs Committees. You get members of Congress. You got the House and the Senate has their own Veterans Affairs Committees. That's where it should be. They've got subcommittees, and they've got staff.
And there's plenty of resources coming forward and asking for the appropriate individuals who are violating what was determined in the Inspector General's audit. Why aren't the congressmen and women or the staff people or whomever is appropriate asking for these people to be relieved of duty? In the military, you would have been relieved of duty in a heartbeat. Matter of fact, you saw where there's some deaths out in in one of the posts in Texas, I think Hood, and basically they just start firing the chain of command. You're not doing it good. You're not fixing this issue. You're out of here. Would be the right kind of mentality to have.
Exactly. So that's the thing to do, is to get that into the committees and start holding them accountable and start asking them on the show and say, hey, we want to talk to you about why things aren't being held accountable. You know, who knows? But I don't know what the answer to this is, although I think it starts with anybody you can find on the Veterans Affairs committees that has any real sense of what's going on at the VA and actually wants to do something about it. And maybe that means they're doing it to make a name for themselves for the election. I don't care what the motivation is, as long as they do the right thing. So you can find that person, find that representative, find that senator who really wants to do something right. I would talk to members of Congress who are veterans. You know, do you have a list of all the members of Congress who are veterans?
Yes, we have. Let me tell you, we have a very exhaustive list, and we do connect with legislators regularly. But it's difficult because, again, our bandwidth is only so much. You know, our ability
I understand.
Be on so many topics, because when you lobby everybody on everything, nobody listens. So the key to lobbying is to be clear, concise, and in tune with the individuals you engage to make sure they're the right ones.
Yeah, and we're out of time. We actually ran the clock out. So the only thing I can suggest is the last thing is, if you want to get Congressman Greg Stubbe on our show and we can talk to him, maybe that's a way to start approaching this and see what he has to say. We have to go. Thank you, sir. This has been fun. So give your name
Greg.
In real quickly and the where to reach you, which organization and website, things like that, and then we have to go.
Okay. Again, I'm Jimmy T. Smith, the Florida Coalition's Director for the Concerned Veterans for America. You can find us at cd4a.org. That's charlievictor4alpha.org. And if you have a VA story to tell, you can do it at myvastory.org. That's one word, myvastory.org.
Perfect. Thank you, sir. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow at 7 o'clock.